Saving money on your next project now at Menards. Menards is the leading supplier of quality roof and floor trusses. Choose from our large selection of residential and post-frame trusses or design custom trusses specifically for your project. Get started on your building project today, in-store or on Menards.com. Plus, view our weekly flyer for all the great deals happening now. Save big money at Menards.
Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Twitchers want to know, Joe George, what's the favorite Cubs uniform that you own?
This isn't fair. This is because Junior Bronco doesn't like me, so now they're torturing me.
I don't think Junior Bronco likes anybody except for me.
I can tell.
But what's your favorite Cub jersey?
Yeah, you don't dodge
the traditional white pinstripe?
Like the actual jersey or like the player?
The player.
Do you have the jersey, the white? I don't have any Cubs jerseys anymore.
Just a couple White Sox ones?
Nope. Nope. All my Cubs jerseys were from the team that won the World Series and no one's left. They're all gone except for one guy.
Who, Ben Zobrist?
I had a Baez was my last jersey I owned.
Now he's a Tiger?
Yeah.
Who's the Cub that's still there? Went, the manager?
He went deep on Verlander yesterday.
Yeah, he did.
Kyle Hendricks. Then David Ross, I guess, was the player.
Like I said, David Ross was a player then.
You have a David Ross jersey?
No, he asked who was left from 16.
It'd be weird to have a David Ross jersey.
You have Rossi's American flag sport coat, though, that he wore at the White House, right?
Yeah.
8437, Bregman has one of the best eyes in the game, but also refuses to defend his plate. Instead, complains when a close pitch gets called a strike. That's a very old school mantra. That's an old school baseball guy, kind of a get off my lawn baseball guy. But I don't disagree. I don't disagree with what 8437 is saying.
Yeah, I mean, I think we should ask, who's more of a get off my lawn guy, Jeremy or Joel?
I think I'm a hybrid. I think I'm a hybrid.
Yeah, I think I am too.
But who's more of it?
Probably Blankers.
Oh my God.
I don't know.
Probably
Jeremy.
Blankers. I didn't mind that Wander Franco spun the baseball.
I did.
I didn't mind that.
Okay. You don't mind it till he drops it.
We'll put that in a check.
Or it means something.
I don't care if he drops the ball at shortstop.
Oh my God,
if it ends up costing you a run or a game, if it was my team, I would care. But I don't care if being somebody else's team. Like if Pena did it and dropped the ball and cost him the game, yeah, that'd be annoying.
Like when Bregman did that thing in spring training where he bounced at the second base.
Yeah, spring training, don't care.
Because he said Rendon does it. I think
Rendon did it.
Arenado?
It was Rendon.
Yeah, Rendon, yeah.
I saw Rendon do that the other day.
That's crazy.
The problem is that Bregman did it when he was standing up. Like Bregman did it going to his left, fielding it, standing it up, and then spiked it like Gronkowski to second base. Rendon only does it when he's he dives, and he does it from his knees.
It's so weird. Totally
different plays.
When Bregman did that, I was just like, what are we doing here?
That was so bad.
Like this seems like a very bad idea.
So bad. Ocho says, I think the Astros West Coast road trip will allow us to really appreciate the addition of the pitch clock. A brother needs his beauty sleep. That's a good point. Having the pitch clock, it does lead to faster games. All right, is this guy a Seattle Mariner or is this guy a La Liga football player? You ready to go, Blankers?
Yeah, I didn't do very well the last time.
No, you were 0 for 3. You had a very Jose Abreu
last time, what was it? What was it, though? It wasn't Mariners. It was the Giants?
Yeah.
It was the Giants playing the Astros. Here.
It was a San Francisco Giant or a La Liga football player, and you went
0 for 3.
You were Jose Abreuing this game.
Yeah,
I hope you do better with Seattle. You should have a better understanding of Seattle. They're in the American League West. They're a division rival. All of those things. All right, let's get it started. Is this guy a Seattle Mariner or is he a footballer in La Liga? Justin Topa and Tony Cruz.
There's two of them?
Yeah, I'm going to give you two. One of them is a Seattle Mariner. One of them is a footballer in La Liga.
Cruz is a Mariner.
I disagree. Cruz, because of the way he said it, he was intentionally misleading me. I'm going to say Cruz is La Liga.
One of you is right. One of you is Tony Cruz. Tony Cruz is like a really good footballer in La Liga. Like, it's a very popular La Liga.
Eat it, Joe.
Yeah.
Yeah. So. Sorry, I don't know about a fake sport. Sorry, Glenn.
Soccer matters.
Ooh.
All right, here's the next one. Jose Caballero and Alfonso Pedraza. One of them's a Seattle Mariner. One of them's a footballer in La Liga.
We go. The second guy is the footballer.
Pedraza?
Yeah.
I'm gonna. I guess going opposite of Joe makes me right. I'm gonna go. Pedraza is a Mariner.
You are now tied. Caballero. Oh, yes. Caballero is a utility infielder for the Seattle Mariners, and Alfonso Pedraza is a footballer in La Liga. All right, last one. Taylor Saucedo, Lucas Ocampos.
Would you like to go first?
No, you keep the streak alive.
Can you say those names again?
Yes. Taylor Saucedo and Lucas Ocampos.
I'm going to go with Saucedo as a footballer.
I'm going to agree with Joe. Oh.
Y'all both lose.
Damn. Joel, that's a bad
Y'all both went that one for three.
I was trying to.
That was a bad strategy, no, Joel.
Lucas Ocampos is an Argentinian footballer who plays winger for La Liga club Sevilla. And Taylor Saucedo, I believe, is a reliever. For the Seattle Mariners. So, y'all are 1-for-3.
Dang
it. It's admirable. 333 is not bad.
I mean, look, we got one more than we got the other day.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because yeah,
I didn't really play the other one. So.
No, you didn't really.
I appreciate you riding with me on that loss. Yeah. But, so, yeah, it wasn't my most shining moment.
Y'all should have split it up there. Make sure that one of y'all guaranteed two.
Probably right.
That was terrible.
And I should have stuck with my philosophy to go against or Joe. I would have won.
Or team player there.
That's true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We united against Jeremy and we lost.
Yeah, I came out the winner. All right. The MLB.com was listing the best rivalries in baseball, and they did it by division. So they did the best rivalry in baseball by division. The AL East, they had Yankees-Rays, which just blew my mind. Like, how do you not have Yankees-Red Sox? I understand the Rays are the best team in baseball. But what would you consider the best rivalry in the AL West to be?
AL West rivalry would be... Wow. I mean, up until recently, I think it was... Actually, it was the Astros A's because the A's were relevant and were competitive when they had a good team. But after, before the start of last year, they just completely tanked and pulled the plug. So I guess it's now Astros Mariners.
That's what they have, the Astros Mariners. Like the
in
Rangers,
the division.
In the division. The Rangers were always good when the Astros weren't, and then the Astros were good when the Rangers weren't. Like now they're both pretty good. Like maybe that kind of flips a little bit where the Astros Rangers can be good at the same time and kind of have a pretty good rivalry here. We'll see. But, yeah, they have Astros-Mariners as the best rivalry in the American League West, which I don't disagree with, like especially if you go, like, recent, yet last year, where they had some bad blood throughout the season, especially the fan base, et cetera, et cetera. Seattle was posting my home address on Twitter because I fired up the Seattle Mariner fans, and then they met in the playoffs. So they played three close games, and the Astros won them all and swept the Mariners right out of Seattle. But what do you think is the Astros' best rivalry just period? Because I don't think it's Seattle. What do you think the Astros' best rival is right now? Their most hated rival that is in Major League Baseball in divisions do not matter.
I just think it's the Yankees. I just think that there's too much of the fan base's venom and passion. There's too much in terms of the matchups when they mattered the most in the playoffs. There's too much that was from the doorbell and John Boy and the Grand Slam or the home run that Altuve hit and the ways that the Yankees, you know, consistently and constantly complained about the Astros and bitched about what had happened and said things would be different and they weren't to their to the Yankees fans chanting, "We want Houston." I think it's the Yankees.
I don't really think there's another answer. I think the Yankees are the only
answer.
Some
would say the Dodgers, but they really haven't seen each other since the World Series.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. They played, I think, what was it, one interleague series since then? The World Series.
Wasn't it during the pandemic when there was no fans?
Exactly.
What was it?
When Joe Kelly threw
high and
tight?
I was going to say it was the Joe Kelly Correa incident, right?
And there was no one in the seats.
Yeah, I think that'd be the
only... Well, Zach Greinke was, but he was sitting next to some cardboard cutouts.
That's a good point.
Thank you very much.
I forgot about Greinke doing that. He's the best. I think the Dodgers would be option two if you're going outside the division.
I think the Dodgers are like on the most hated list, but I wouldn't call them a rival just because you don't see them enough.
Yeah, I think the only real rival is the Yankees.
I think the Yankees are probably the biggest rival. And can you even call that a rivalry? The Astros are the Yankees' daddy.
I think from like a traditional standpoint, no, but I think in terms of baseball, yes. Because like there's really not like, how many elite rivalries are there in baseball?
Like, not Santa says the hammer is not a rival of the nail.
That's a good point.
It's a really good analogy.
Like Red Sox Yankees is a great rivalry.
Yeah. Yeah. Giants Dodgers.
Giants Dodgers.
Giants Dodgers is big. Now Padres Dodgers too.
Is there anything that's like outside of
what about Cubs Cardinals?
Yeah, Cubs Cardinals is pretty good. It's bigger than Cubs White Sox.
Yeah, I think Cubs Cardinals is probably on that list.
Cubs Brewers has gotten some traction in the last several years. I don't know that Joe wants to admit that.
No. Oh, I hated going there. Yeah. I love that ballpark, but I hated going to Milwaukee. Like, for, like when the Cubs were good and the Brewers were good, it was nasty.
Really?
Yeah.
Milwaukee sucks?
No, it's just no, like
it was just it got
Miller,
very heated.
The Miller Lite was flowing.
And the fans were going back it and was forth flowing good. Trying to get seats, and there were more seats in Miller Park, so Cubs fans were at Miller, and then their fights were breaking out.
Yeah, and then the Brewers, then Milwaukee was such a bad organization, they had to stop letting Chicago fans buy tickets.
Yeah. Dre says Braves Mets. Is that a rivalry?
I don't know. Like, I guess.
I think they're two good teams in the NL East, but I don't really view Braves Mets as much of a rivalry.
Not yet. It could be.
Yeah.
I'm like, if you were to say for each of those teams, like, who would their true rivals be? Who is the Braves' true rival? Cardinals?
I don't know. I can't really.
Because the Nationals were kind of a flash in the pan in the division.
Yeah.
But they were like that. They were bright for a couple of years, and everybody took notice. And then they had the World Series, and then poof.
I don't feel like the Braves really have a natural rival.
I think you're probably right.
To be honest, like the Astros, were the Astros a rival with the Braves a little bit there? They're in the late '90s when the Astros were getting the wild card round and getting beat by the Braves,
or the marathon game here, and the playoff games, you know, that for Astros fans mean something because it was their, you know, that was real important baseball at the time, as opposed to the Braves who were there every single year.
A lot of people are getting the NL Central days saying Astros Cardinals is a rivalry that used to be pretty good.
It did used to be pretty darn
and
good.
They would have the high stakes of the playoffs as well. I just feel like that's gone now once the Astros moved to
there
the
was
American
a lot
League.
More hatred in the stands when you had the Cardinal in the division, because you had the Cardinals fans trying to come in to Minute Maid and the Cubs fans, and there's a lot more passion in the regular season games when you were in that division.
Yeah, I feel like, just from your guys' perspective, like, is this because it's still so young? Like, there's just not that history really within the AL West for the Astros still?
I don't think that's what it is. I think it's more...
Because it feels like most, just based off the reaction, is like most Astros fans just quickly here like would identify more with the rivalries of the NL Central versus the AL West.
I think it's more about the stakes that you've played against teams. Like the Astros have played high stakes games with the Cardinals. Like they've met in the NLCS a couple of times. They would, you know, be battling it out for the division title. The Astros, since they've been good, really haven't been in divisional races, and they've always been kind of different. Like the A's sometimes were good. Yeah. The Mariners last year finally got good. When the Rangers were good, the Astros weren't. I think that the AL rivals the Yankees, because the Astros have played more high stakes series against the Yankees than any other team in the American League.
No question, but I also think that, you know, it's an arrogant approach, but it's also the truth. When you're the Astros, when you're trying to find a rival, normally it means that they get the best of you as much as you get the best of them, and you've basically gotten the best of everybody in your division, and even with the Yankees. I mean, for the most part, you've gotten the best of the Yankees every time you needed to, whether it be last season in the regular season or in the playoffs. Or whenever you played them.
Everybody on the text line saying Braves Mets are a huge rival. So perhaps
we'll stand
corrected there.
Okay.
I've never really heard of Braves Mets as a big rivalry in baseball.
Because the Astros AL West era is weird. Like, it's hard to find a rivalry because it's like you have like two very distinct eras almost. It's like you're like the worst team in baseball or the best team in baseball.
I mean, you've got enough like silver boots to start your own Cavenders, and you know, and then it's kind of like a tag team where every team other than you in the division is trying to make a 1 year push. And then they disappear again.
It's one thing I hope that with, you know, if they do expand to 32 at some point, that they redo the divisions to try to create some natural rivalries.
8064 says Chipper named his son Shay just because he was a Met killer. I remember that. I remember Chipper dominating the Mets.
Is that true?
Yeah, it's true.
Shay?
Yeah, he named him Shay after Shea Stadium.
Yeah, I get that, but I
yeah, he named him Shay.
I feel bad for the kid.
But I always thought that was like one-sided, where the Braves just owned the Mets, and it was more like big brother, little brother, not like a real rivalry. But maybe I'm wrong on that one. Like I never felt Braves Mets was Yankees Red Sox. Like it's not even close. I wouldn't even put it in the same category as Dodgers Giants or Cubs Cardinals. So that one's interesting to me. 713-780-ESPN, the HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. We talk about situation mattering a lot for rookie quarterbacks. Is the Texans situation good for a rookie quarterback? How good? 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, before we go to the break, tell you about the good people at Apollo Men's Health. Look, if you've been getting ready for summer, maybe, you know, like Joe, you're getting ready for swimsuit season and, you know, the banana hammocks are in and you want to be able to display the best you. Well, there's a way that Apollo Men's Health can help you get ready for bikini season because of the fact that they have a weight loss program right now, FDA approved, in which you get one injection. I believe it's a one per week. You can lose up to 6 pounds a week. And when you do the math, you could lose up to 24 pounds in a month and really get yourself ready for the summer months and get yourself kind of catapulted on a workout program. And you can check it all out at ApolloMen'sHealth.com, on their website, ApolloMH.com. They have all kinds of services from the semi-glutide that I was just talking about to all the different ways they can get more energy in your life on a daily basis, from B12 shots to all the different ways men and women are reaping the benefits of hormone therapy. You can get on a workout program, start with a body composition analysis, and then chart your progress every couple of weeks to see how your body fat has gone down, your muscle mass is going up. You want to recover quicker? HGH peptide therapy. Stuff for your smoothies, they got that too. Two locations to better serve you near downtown Houston. They're going to be at both locations, a really, really experienced, intelligent, and friendly staff that wants to help you out. Check them out today and tell them I sent you by a free B12 shot or a body comp on your first official visit. But make sure you check them out, sign up for an appointment, and see what they can do for you. Most major insurance is accepted. Discounts for military personnel and first responders. Go to ApolloMH.com, book that appointment, and then mention my name and see how they can open doors for you and get you the results you need. They're good people doing great things on a daily basis. Go see my friends at Apollo Men's Health.
Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
I should look up some of these old Seattle tweets whenever they wanted to kill me last year.
I don't think you need to do that to yourself.
I don't mind.
They never sent you anything, did they? Or do anything to your address? I would hope not.
I mean, my cars did get stolen.
Well, that's true. But
I don't think so. I don't think that was similar. Seattle hates the Astros. Seattle hates me. We talk a lot about situations when it comes to rookie quarterbacks. Like Pat Mahomes' situation as a rookie quarterback was probably in the last two decades the best situation that you can be in. A really good football team, a team that allowed him to sit for a year, and then he was ready to rock in year two. He was really good, had an offensive wizard, had a really good offense around him, and just took off. I think a lot of the rookie quarterbacks that fell, sometimes it's them, sometimes it's the situation that they're in. The situation's just really bad, and no quarterback can excel in that situation. So if we're looking at the Houston Texans situation for a rookie quarterback, because, look, I just can't imagine a scenario where C.J. Stroud's not the week one starter for the Houston Texans. Would you consider the Texans situation, I guess I'll ask you, do you consider it good? Is it bad? What do you make of the Texans situation for a rookie quarterback?
I think it is what it is. I think it's encouraging for the
it is what it is
because I think it's going to be good for the long haul. But I've been sitting here all week harping on the fact that even the best of quarterbacks that turned out to be some of the best that the league has ever seen in their first year, they have their growing pains. They have their struggles. They don't win a lot of football games. They learn on the fly and they make mistakes. And so as much as I am hopeful for the long-term success of CJ Stroud, I'm not going to sit here and tell you that I'm optimistic that he's going to have this success story of a rookie year and he's going to put it all together right away. I think that he's going to take his lumps. I think he's going to make those mistakes. I think that along with a new first-time coordinator and a new head coach, I think everybody's going to be learning as they go and building chemistry and camaraderie and understanding. And I think that's going to show in a lot more losses in the early going than it will for the totality of everybody's career that's involved here. And it starts with C.J. Stroud. So I think that, look, I want to be extremely encouraged about C.J. Stroud, but I'm not going to be optimistic in terms of the first-year results.
No, I think the results in the situation are different, though. Like, what C.J. Stroud's numbers look like, how many wins the Houston Texans get, I don't think that, you know, maybe that there are some things that will be synonymous, maybe some things that are, you know, equal to both. But when I look at the situation, I look at it more from like personnel. Like, is the offense, like David Carr, the offensive line ruined any chance of yeah. David Carr being a solid quarterback in the NFL? I can't guarantee you that David Carr would have been a solid quarterback in the NFL, But the Texans' offensive line guaranteed that we were never going to find out. We were never going to see David Carr have a chance to succeed because of that offensive line. So whenever I look at C.J. Stroud, again, I think he's going to be a week one starter. I think the situation is fine. Like, I think it's okay. It's not Kansas City. It's not Pat Mahomes' situation when he took over as a second-year starter. But it's not David Carr either. Like, the offensive line should be formidable.
Right.
The offensive line should be able to protect C.J. Stroud enough. And they have a lot invested in the offensive line, whether it's money, Laremy Tunsil, whether it's draft capital, Titus Howard, Kenyon Green. So they've invested a lot in that offensive line through either finances or through the draft. So they should have an offensive line that is ready to protect C.J. Stroud. Go ahead.
You're right, and I totally agree with that. But I think it's almost like I feel like we need to press the rewind button and go revisit going into last season with Davis Mills and Nick Caserio's quotes and say this quarterback in specifics should not be judged by wins and losses. He should be judged by, is he picking up the offense? This is the same things I said about Davis Mills.
Yeah.
But the only problem is you didn't care if they weren't concerned with wins and losses as much. Now you do because of the trade you made.
I still think it's a separate conversation, though. Like, them going 6-11, I don't think really matters about, like, the situation that he's in. This is more about, like, C.J. Stroud's development. Mm-hmm. Like, are the Houston Texans putting him in a situation that is going to stunt his growth as a quarterback?
Unlike Mills, who you didn't know what he could be. You pretty much know this guy has been earmarked to be your future. You just got to see what he can do.
Right. And, like, the offensive line should be a good enough situation that's going to protect C.J. Stroud. So when I look at the offensive line, I think C.J. Stroud's in a pretty good spot from that point of view. Mm-hmm. I think it's compared to, like, is it better than Carolina's offensive line? Yeah, I think so. Is it better than the Colts' offensive line? Colts were dreadful last year on the offensive line. So the offensive line and the protection for C.J. Stroud, I think, is pretty good. A pretty good situation for a rookie quarterback. Then you look at the running game. Like, Damian Pearson year two versus year one should be better. With Bobby Slowick as his offensive coordinator coming from the Shanahan tree, which always produces really good running backs, and then you added Devin Singletary, which is a huge upgrade over Rex Burkhead, the running back situation should be good enough again for C.J. Stroud. The one area that you can look at, because look, running game, good enough for C.J. Stroud as a rookie. The situation's just fine. Offensive line, situation's just fine. The one area that you can look at, and I think it's worth the conversation, is are the pass catchers good enough of a situation for CJ?
Tight end, Dalton Schultz is a huge upgrade. It's a one-year deal. But Dalton Schultz, if he's anywhere close to what he was in Dallas, regardless of what he does blocking, he's going to be an open target. He's going to be a guy that can catch the football. He's an upgrade to who they had at tight end. So I like that. But I understand that from the receiver room standpoint, there are question marks. Who's the wide receiver one? Do they even have one? You know, is Tank Dell going to be a guy that can contribute on the offense right away in year one? What are you going to get out of John Metchie? Are we ever going to see the ceiling on, how high the ceiling can be on Nico Collins? Or have we already seen it, which may be scarier? And Robert Woods, what does he have left in the tank?
I think that it's good enough. I think, like, I don't think it's going to be an elite, like, receiving unit. I don't think it's going to be an elite pass catcher unit. But I think Dalton Schultz is a solid tight end that's going to be, you know, a bit of a security for C.J. Stroud, a bit of a,
safety valve.
A little bit of that, yeah. Then you look at the receivers that they have. I think they're good enough for C.J. Stroud to where you're at least not stunting the growth of C.J. Stroud. Do I expect the Texans receiver room to be one of the top 25, like, fantasy outputs in the NFL? No, not at all. Like, not at all. I'm not even sure who the Texans' leading pass catcher is going
to
be.
And that's a two-way street, right? Because it's got to be, is the guy delivering the football and getting it where it needs to go, and are the guys that he's throwing to catching the football? And I think there's more questions right now than there are answers.
Sure. Yeah, I think so. But, like, I think that there's enough there for C.J. Stroud to have the situation be fine. He's going to have protection that should be pretty good, lots of investment there. He's going to have a running game that's going to have Damian Pearson his second year and Bobby Slowick from the Shanahan system that's going to allow a team to run the football more effectively. And while the receiving room isn't fantastic relative to the rest of the NFL, it is. Like, look at this receiver room. Look at every other receiver room in the NFL. The Houston Texans are towards the bottom. But there are some pieces there that, one, give you hope and should be good enough for Stroud in this situation. situation. Robert Woods, look, I don't think Robert Woods is going to have a fantastic season, but a veteran in the room I think is going to be helpful for C.J. Stroud. John Metchie and Tank Dell, we can kind of look at them in the same vein, more inside guys that are capable of playing the outside, but are quick, good route runners and create space to get open, which C.J. Stroud, accurate quarterback, should be able to take advantage of that. And then Dalton Schultz is a professional tight end in the NFL. Is he a top half tight end in the NFL? Probably not. But a huge upgrade at that position that's going to help out C.J. Stroud. So I look at the Texans situation for a rookie quarterback. While it's not great, it's not bad, and I don't think at all it's going to hinder the development of C.J.
Stroud. Fair to say it's a better
Stroud.
Receiver room and better options than Davis Mills had a year ago?
I mean, he had Brandon Cooks.
I know, because that's the wild card for me.
Like, Brandon Cooks was a better receiver than what the Houston Texans have currently. Now, John Metchie, I think, can outproduce what Brandon Cooks did last year in a kind of way too optimistic hope that John Metchie has a good year.
Robert Woods, to me, seems like maybe a lesser player than Brandon Cooks.
I don't think it's close.
But a more likely good teammate and guy that can help the receivers and the quarterback learn.
To be fair, the Texans said good things about Brandon Cooks. Like, I understand the way he left was not, like, deemed great by the city from the outsiders, but there's a lot of people that stood up for Brandon Cooks while he was here, and then whenever he left, a lot of people were advocating for Brandon Cooks once he was gone.
I think that's fair to say, but I also think it's fair to say, and I talked to some people that were close to it, too, that said that it was kind of like, you know, a line drawn in the middle of the locker room, that there were guys that liked him. There were guys that truly didn't. There were guys that he went out of his way to try and be friendly or helpful to and a good teammate to, and guys he didn't. So, I mean, we can go back and forth on what kind of a guy he was, or what kind of a locker room guy he was. I think he was a better football player than Robert Woods, but I think that if you're truly now developing your future quarterback, as opposed to trying to figure out who Davis Mills was, but still, as we said, you got to give him every opportunity to succeed a year ago. Now it's even more important. I think they have a more complete receiver room. And then because of the upgrade at tight end, I think he has better resources than Davis Mills had a year ago.
I think so, too. And I think because you can look at it as, do John Metchie and Tank Dell, are they better than Brandon Cooks? Like, the two of them combined. Like,
as an NFL receiver, I can't say that.
No, but the contributions that you're going to get from both of those guys, is it going to outweigh what you got from
Brandon
Cooks?
That's assuming that Metchie's good. Not only is he good to go, but he's going to be there, and there's going to be no setbacks at all, and he's going to be there all year.
Yeah, I also don't like this question. Like, why are we comparing two players to one? Like, you can't.
Because
you're going to compare.
Because you're talking about the room. Like,
sure,
the room is better.
But there needs to be somebody included to Brandon Cooks, too. Like, what receiver is John Metchie in terms of production? What number is Tank Dell in terms of production?
So, like, your room was Chris Conley, Brandon Cooks, Nico Collins was, like, your main three last year, right?
Okay.
This year, it's Robert Woods, John Metchie, Nico Collins, Tank Dell.
Like,
can this group... Yeah, because I can't remember who the fourth Texan
maybe
was.
Maybe Philip Dorsett?
Yeah, I guess so. Who's technically still on the team, right?
I don't think he is.
No, I think he did sign somewhere else.
Yeah, I think he signed somewhere else.
Is this four better than that four collectively? I think the answer is yes. Like, while Brandon Cooks was by far the best receiver of any of these guys, the collective four now should be better than last year.
I think there's more talent.
Yeah. I really think Nico Collins versus Nico Collins is a wash. That's just me.
Fair.
But Nico Collins with a better quarterback versus Nico Collins with Davis Mills and a lesser offense should have more production.
And they're in the red zone more to get him the ball.
Did we say Chris Moore? Chris Moore was the second leading receiver last year.
I think I said Chris Conley. I meant Chris Moore.
Chris Moore was the second leading receiver for the Texans last year with 48. Cool. Not a good receiver room last year. I would say this receiver room is better than last year's receiver room.
I think Schultz.
From at least a talented point of view.
I think Schultz makes a big difference because the tight ends, as much as they were hoping they got something out of O.J. Howard.
Akins was okay. Like, Akins was all right, but I don't think Akins is as good a football player as Dalton Schultz.
Right.
I think Dalton Schultz is a much better football player than Akins.
I'd like to think Akins is a better blocker. I think Schultz is a way better receiver.
Is this room better than the room for Bryce Young? So they're like, what?
Let's talk about that on the other side. And I also want to ask you guys about, like, who's going to be the most productive receiver for this team? Because, like, wide receiver one, wide receiver two, like, sometimes we get lost in translation of that guy's your best, like, whatever. Like, from a production standpoint, who has the best production in this receiver room? 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Talking about production of receivers, one of the things that you can bank on production from is Gentle Ben. Whether it's the vodka, whether it's the bourbon, whether it's the gin. I love telling you about Gentle Ben because I love it. At the top of that list is because I believe what I say. You know that about me. I believe what I say even if people hate me for it. Gentle Ben is the best, though. Whether it's the vodka, which is the best vodka in the Lone Star State, whether it's the gin, which is the best in the market, or the bourbon, which is the double platinum winner at the prestigious Ascot Awards. Gentle Ben uses their innovative Proseto craft technology that makes them better across the board. Purity, aroma, taste, they sweep every category. You'll love what's not in Gentle Ben because their purification process is unrivaled. It is smooth. It is clean. It eliminates the burn. Don't labor through your drink. Enjoy it. Savor it. And you can do that with Gentle Ben. Stop by the Gentle Ben Tasting Room in Alvin. Head to Total Wine. Head to Specs. Many of the other local stores as well, local liquor stores, and pick up your bottle today, whether it's the vodka, whether it's the gin, whether it's the bourbon. Astros are on a road trip, but whenever they get back, stop by the Gentle Ben Bar when you're heading to an Astros game, just to the left of the Crawford boxes, right when you walk in the Union Station entrance. Sit back with good company and raise a glass to the very best, Gentle Ben.
Turn down for what?
Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Degenerate gambler saying, how many days till football, Jeremy? I don't know. I mean, it would start somewhere around September 1st.
All I know is 6 days till the schedule comes out.
Rookie minicamp's what, this weekend?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Get to see C.J. Stroud in a Texans uni. What numbers are you going to be wearing?
I thought they said they were going to announce that.
Isn't he wearing 7?
They haven't announced.
But he wore 7 at Ohio State.
I know, but they already said that. Didn't they already say Case was taking it?
No, Case is taking 18.
Okay.
I know that one. Of course I do. Go Cougs. Kyme Fairbairn's number 7.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, but you're the kicker, so you give it up.
Yeah, but he's the kicker that makes a lot of money.
He's also not on the most solid of ground.
Actually, he had a good year last year.
You gotta.
They love him there.
But
Frank
they
Ross
don't love. They
him.
Don't love what they're paying a kicker. Thanks, Bill O'Brien. They don't
one,
love
though.
That.
Huh? Just pick one and stick to it. This garbage that the Rockets players are doing is annoying.
Yeah, Jabari's going to 10.
I get it. It's what you wore in college, but like the idea that like all these fans bought Jalen Green jerseys, and then after 1 year he changed his number.
Did you hate when Kobe did it?
But you know that.
But that's not one season, dude.
You also know that Jalen Green, as much as he's
different, and they're not Kobe.
But these kids come in with these massive egos normally, and Jalen Green basically didn't make a stink when he wanted the number he wanted because Daniel House didn't want to give it up, and his rap career was about to reference his number.
I will say that's. Daniel House should have given it up. Eric Gordon did not have to give up 10 to Jabari.
Did Daniel House get in garbage time the other night and get a technical within like 30 seconds?
I mean, they got tampering because of tampering charges. The Texans tweeted out yesterday.
You guys can never call me the get off my lawn guy of the show.
Why?
You guys are griping about what jersey number they wear.
It's
I could
dumb.
Not
it's
care
dumb.
Less
it's dumb
what
to wear
jersey
for a year.
Number an athlete wears.
It's wait,
till,
you know what?
Wait
I don't till, care that Jabari's
wait
changing
baby,
his
wait
number.
Wait till baby Branham is old enough to have a jersey,
right.
And the Rockets take a player, and he's wearing number 5.
Cool, you got a throwback,
and then you got to buy
care.
One, and you got to buy a new one the next
but
year.
But on the Branham budget, that's a less. Drop in the bucket. That's easy.
Yeah,
but for
right.
a lot of people, when you think about it, that's the biggest factor. The same way load management sucks. If a family can only see one NBA game a year, and they're waiting to see LeBron come to town, and then he load manages and sits out. If you get a guy, you know, if you get a kid or an adult. The jersey of their favorite player, and he changes his number the next year, you're not happy.
I mean, I didn't
am
say
not
I,
get off my lawn, guys.
You are,
show.
Just not for this
Definitely
topic.
Not. This is the most trivial thing that y'all have ever kicked around.
Texans jersey numbers come out next week.
Woohoo.
Just for the record.
We know what the wheelhouse is leading with that day.
Oh, God.
Poncho does bring up a good point.
Once, yeah, I would be worth zero.
Poncho makes a good point to this conversation. And I think y'all would be pleased with this as guys who are caring about jersey numbers. He says one should be able to exchange their jersey when the diva changes their number. That's a good idea. That's a good idea.
Remember,
that fixes everything.
I thought it was a really good promotion when Schaub took over Carr's number and they allowed you to get a new nameplate.
Yeah, those are good. Like, that's good. That's a good solution there. All right. What is 713-780-3776, by the way? Which Texans receiver has the most production? Because I've been kicking around this idea because I've been drafting fantasy football teams on, I'm not going to say where, but I've been drafting fantasy football
obsessed.
Teams. I do 3 or 4 a day, best ball fantasy football teams. I think I'm over 200-ish.
Obsessed is the wrong word. Addicted.
It's more of a side hustle. I would say.
It was at more the end of the year, hustle. How do you come out on that?
This is like the first year I've been committed to it, so I couldn't tell you. I've done it in the past. I've done pretty good. I've won a few GPPs, but nonetheless, this is why I kind of asked myself this question. Which Texans receiver has the best numbers at the end of the year? Like, who has the most production? Because right now, I think you can make the case for four different guys.
I think Dalton Schultz is in the conversation.
Yeah, I meant receiver.
Oh, well, I mean, he's going to catch passes.
Yeah, sure. If you want to say, like, pass catchers, then that's fine. I don't think
his yardage, his touchdown, he could be towards the top of touchdowns. Yeah. He won't be yardage-wise.
That's, yeah. But I think receptions.
Most likely. Yeah.
Because he's going to be the safety valve for a rookie quarterback that's going to have a lot of panic in him early on, whether he gets hit or not. I think he could have receptions. I think he could have touchdowns. I agree with you on the yards.
I think it's going to be Mechie.
See, I think you can make a case for – throw Schultz in here. I think you make a case for five different guys. I think you can make a case for – like, if you just look at fantasy points, like, now touchdowns have, like, tremendous value over, like, yards. I think Schultz could be the leading fantasy player for the Texans receiver room or pass-catching room. I think that you can make a case for Robert Woods, although I wouldn't believe it. I think you can make a case for Nico Collins, although I wouldn't believe it. I think you can make a case for Tank Dell, although that's a reach, or John Mechie. I think it's going to be John Mechie. I really do. I think John Mechie has the best production, the best stats in 2023 for the Texans.
I'm gonna agree. I don't think it's going to be Tank Dell because I feel like it's going to be very similar to what happened with the Patriots last year with Marcus Jones. Where, like, they're not going to utilize
Marcus
him.
Marcus Jones is a corner.
No, I know, but, like, exactly. They're not going to utilize him in, like, his full capacity until he does some, like, wow moments. Like, I don't think Tank Dell is going to be your one of your top three wide receivers to start the season.
I don't know, man. They traded up for him. They traded up for him to get him in the third round.
But they traded up for the other guys, too. The only one they didn't trade up for is the guy they paid, and that's Robert Woods.
See, honestly, I think Robert Woods is going to get a little bit of Cecil Shorts treatment. I don't think Robert Woods is going to be a top three receiver on this team.
Ooh, I don't know.
I think he's a blocking receiver.
I don't think Robert Woods is going to have top three production on this team. I think Nico's going to have more production than Robert Woods. I think Tank Dell's going to have more production than Robert Woods. And I certainly think John Mechie's going to have more
John
production
Mechie. Than Robert Woods. I don't know about Woods. The other two, because I kind of tend to agree with Joe, but for different reasons. I just think that they're going to use Tank. They're going to probably look to use Tank Dell on special teams, but I don't know how many looks he's going to get in the offense and on the field if Nico and Mechie and Woods are on the field. And I don't know how often and frequent they're going to use him. I think that Woods is a guy that came over here on the cheap, but he's a veteran. And I think that Stroud, early on at least, is going to look for a veteran presence.
He's going to look for the guy who's open.
Well, I get that too, right? And I agree with you both. I think Mechie's got the best chance to lead everybody in receptions. But I would say it's Mechie and Schultz. In terms of receptions.
Yeah, I don't disagree. Like, I think those will be the top two. I think after that, you're kind of shooting blind. Like, I have no idea. Like, I could see Robert Woods being the Cecil Shorts and being your fifth receiver. Like, they brought Noah Brown in, too. But Noah Brown's not going to factor right into a whole lot of receiving stats. He's more of like, he's going to block really well. I could see Robert Woods being behind all three of those guys from a production standpoint. I could also see him being your second leading receiver. Yep. Like, it's kind of a, how would I say it? I don't want to call it a cluster because I like some of the pieces. Like, I like Mechie, I like Tank. I think both of those guys are going to be good pros.
I think it's a crapshoot because
crapshoot's probably the word.
You also have to factor in CJ in his first year. And
yeah, but that's all of them have CJ in their first year, so that's not going to affect their production.
True, but
now
it might
affect their target rate.
Yeah, target rate and the fact that when he's knowing his progressions and understanding who the guys that are going to be more to focus on in a certain route with a certain defense.
Yeah,
I think that'll come more to him as we get later in the season and in year two.
That's probably why you're going Schultz.
Yeah, because he's the safety valve. Yeah,
it's interesting. I'm fascinated who's going to be the best Texans receiver. I really do think it's going to be Mechie.
I don't think it's going to be Damian Pierce. I just want to let you know.
No, I think Singletary has more catches than Pierce.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I think that's easy money.
Is Singletary going to look good in this offense
this year?
He's a weird one because it's one of those guys, like, I always wanted to like him in fantasy as like a value guy for Buffalo, and then they just wouldn't use him.
Now, you could say he's also a safety valve when he's in there.
Yeah, kind of a third down.
Yeah,
down.
And the little wheel routes and the little things like that, he could be utilized.
I think he's going to be good.
He's on a one-year deal, right?
I believe so.
I think so. Now, like, $3 million?
Whenever I say good, like, I'm not saying that Devin Singletary is going to run for 1,000 yards. When I say Devin Singletary is good, I think he's going to be a valuable piece as a third down running back.
He's a better – he's an upgrade from what you've had, like you said. I think that, based on the Fighting Rex Burkheads, the fact that you got a guy that when you get him the football, however you get it to him, he has a chance to – to break some yards off.
Maybe the answer is Tank Dell.
I think that they're going to use Tank quite a bit.
Do you?
Yeah, I do. Because, I mean, they traded up and drafted him. C.J. Stroud loves the guy. He's an incredible route runner.
Slot or burner?
I think they'll probably use him. Well, I think they'll use him a little bit as both. But he's better in the slot than he is as a burner. He's quicker than he is fast.
I just worry about him getting crushed.
He's very elusive, though. But, yeah, that is a concern.
I don't have time now. But, like, apparently, like, C.J. Stroud, like, Tank Dell told him to have the Texans take him.
Yeah, he also DM'd the Texans and said, don't let me leave the city. Because I love Tank Dell so much.
Because C.J. threw to Tank at the combine. So, like, that's kind of, like, where their chemistry started.
Yeah, I'm telling you, he's an unbelievable route runner. He is tiny. That is true.
Like, he is a deep ball machine, and that's one of CJ's strengths.
Whenever I would be, because I went to every single Tank Dell college football game, and a lot of times, you know, riding the elevator in the press box, you run into scouts, and I would tell every scout, you will love Tank Dell. I told every single one of them, you will love Tank Dell. As a matter of fact, I think I'm the reason that Tank Dell is a Houston Texan. 1185, do we know that Metchie will be back? He's doing all the OTA stuff. He's doing all the minicamp stuff, so it does appear that way. 713-780-3776. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5. I don't know if you've noticed with what's going on in the music world, the pop culture world, but Ed Sheeran had a little bit of an issue with a copyright case featuring an old Marvin Gaye song. Ed Sheeran won this copyright case, but should he have won this copyright case? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Your team's our priority. Join the conversation with the Killer Bees. Now coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Joe just said that C.J. Stroud's going to be better than Dak Prescott.
Bit abstract.
Jake wanted to trade two for Dak Prescott, so he better be.
And I think C.J.'s better. Going to be better. I think Dak is the most overrated, overpaid quarterback in the NFL.
More than Deshaun?
Yeah, because what has Dak ever accomplished without an elite run game?
What has Deshaun accomplished?
I mean, statistically, he's been way better than Dak.
Yeah, he led the league in passing when they won four games.
I know. But, like, I mean, look at last year. The Cowboys went 3-1 without Dak.
Cooper Rush is the truth.
But, I mean, both Deshaun and Dak were guys that were victim of circumstance, just raking in yards and empty stats while their team was down like 10, 15 points apiece.
When Dak went, like, I'm not saying Deshaun, like, I didn't bring Deshaun into this conversation.
Yeah, I did.
But, like, when Dak wins, like, a meaningful football game, like, call me. He's Kirk Cousins. Kirk Cousins, Dak Prescott.
I don't think much of Dak.
Derek Carr. Like,
I'm not mad at.
They're all the same group of meh.
I'm not mad at Dak because he got his money, but I think that where the misconception lies is once they get the money, that they get the money as the same kind of money as the top quarterbacks in the league, everybody then certainly assumes and expects him to be one of the top quarterbacks in the league, and he's not.
He's a pile of meh. I like that. They got a bunch of pile of meh quarterbacks in the NFL. He's just,
yeah, it's like, who's the second best quarterback in the NFC?
Second best quarterback in the NFC?
We had this conversation the minute that Rodgers was going to be traded.
Is it Dak? Is it Derek Carr? Is it Kirk Cousins? Is it Matt Stafford?
I think Cousins is better than Dak, to be honest.
Ooh, I don't know if I can go that far.
We're calling Jalen Hurts the best quarterback in the NFC?
Yeah.
At this point, I don't think it's close.
Yeah.
You know who's going really high in fantasy football?
Justin.
Justin Fields. Now, but I don't think that. I think it's more because he's a running quarterback.
Yeah, that's because the running value for...
Yeah, he gets priced up because of his running value. I mean, I don't think he's the second best quarterback in the NFC. That's a great question. I haven't thought about that.
We talked about it when the Roger trade was basically finalized without being finalized.
Did we?
Yeah. We did.
Yes. We talked about this?
Yes. Because it was a spinoff of talking about the fact that the AFC had all the top 10 quarterbacks. And you couldn't just get a good quarterback or a franchise quarterback. It had to be a guy that could compete with those guys as opposed to if they were drafted in the NFC.
Oh, yeah, I remember now. Is it Daniel Jones? Could Daniel Jones be the second best quarterback in the NFC? How about Jared Goff? We kind of sleep on Jared Goff a bit.
Yeah, we do.
Like, he's probably in that pile of meh, but he might be the best in the pile of meh, especially when he has my guy Benny Johnson calling the plays offensively there. I think we might be sleep a little bit on Jared Goff. 713-780-ESPN. HRMP listener
you
line.
You and Brendan are going to watch Lions games remotely together?
Brendan and I have shared some things in the past.
Okay, good.
Like an NFL Plus subscription that I hope he doesn't change his password for now that he moved to Chicago. I'm going to have to check up on that. Should we? Yeah, let's take Jerry real quick. Is this Jerry Jones? 713-780-3776. We'll get to the whole what's going on in the music biz here in a second. But let's go out to Jerry first. Jerry, you're in the hive of the Killer Bees. What's up, Jerry?
Yeah, I'm Jerry's cousin, so watch it. No.
Good one.
Far fan, though. I've got something messed up with my radio, and I've been stuck with on this y'all station for about a month. But
sounds like a good.
You're right about Prescott. I just wanted to call you in and tell you you are right about Prescott. I'd like to see him go.
Appreciate the call, Jerry. That was some fantastic.
Yeah, Jerry doesn't sound too enamored with the fact that he's been listening to us for a month.
Let's recap Jerry's call real quick. First off, Jerry called in and said he was Jerry Jones' cousin, Jerry.
So watch it.
He said his radio's been stuck on us for how long?
A month.
I hope he has a meter. and then he says, yeah, I agree with you guys. Dak sucks. I love that call. That might be the favorite call we've ever had on the Killer Bees. Apologize to all of our callers, even you, Dre. 713-780-ESPN, the HRP.
I wasn't even here for that, but I've heard about it.
713-780-3776. All right, this is something that's been going on in the music business forever. Like artists stealing other artists' like beats, and I'm not a music guy, so I'm missing out on the vernacular here. But basically, like copyright infringement, things like that. The one that always comes to mind for me was whenever Vanilla Ice took Ice Ice Baby from the Queen and David Bowie for Under Pressure. He got sued for that. The latest one is Ed Sheeran, which, how do you feel about Ed Sheeran? You like Ed Sheeran?
I think Ed Sheeran's okay.
I like Ed Sheeran. I think Ed Sheeran's really good, really talented. I think highly of Ed Sheeran. He's my favorite ginger, Ed Sheeran is.
Like, every time Justin Turner came to bat for the Dodgers, they used to play an Ed Sheeran
which
song.
Which one?
It's like a sped-up music box.
Oh, really?
It's like a bing, 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 bing.
Ed Sheeran's pretty talented.
He is talented, but that one song I can't stand because every time I hear it, I think about Justin Turner and the Dodgers.
So anyways, Ed Sheeran got sued in a copyright case, and the co-writer of Let's Get It On, which is made famous by Marvin Gaye, and the news came out yesterday, the verdict came out yesterday, that Ed Sheeran won this copyright case. I listened to these songs earlier today. Should Ed Sheeran have won this copyright case? How are we doing this, Joe? Are we playing Ed Sheeran first? All right, Ed Sheeran, Thinking Out Loud is the song. Here's Ed Sheeran's Thinking Out Loud.
Darling, I will
heard this.
Be loving you till 70. And baby, my heart could still fall as hard at 23.
How can you not fall in love with that voice? I mean, everybody loves Ed Sheeran. So that's Ed Sheeran's Thinking Out Loud. Here's Marvin Gaye's Let's Get It On.
Oh, come on. Woo. Let's get it on.
Oh,
let's get it on. Let's love, baby. Let's get it on.
Pretty close? Pretty similar?
The what do they call it? The melody or the riff, whatever, that main line, it's very similar.
I think it's very similar. That was your mashup?
That sounds like Joe's Friday night garage band warming up.
There's some places on YouTube. It's the same thing.
There's a little flat note in there on the Ed Sheeran part.
I watched a YouTube on it today, and like one of them's like an E major and the other one's like in D major. But if you like make the difference there, it's like the same exact beat.
But then it makes you ask the question, there's only so many different kind of melodies you can create and without getting close.
No, melodies are infinite, Blankers.
I disagree.
Anybody knows that.
Nope. That's why... Look, ironically, and the weird thing about this, there's a guy, a friend of mine that I've known a long time at my gym that has a very distinct look, too. What does that mean? He has like a Jose Abreu with the rubber bands in his beard, only he has three different strands like that.
Oh.
And I was watching TV in the house one morning in the living room, and they started covering the case, and they said, I always thought it was Marvin Gaye's family, because I believe Marvin Gaye's already sued, his family has sued people before. In cases like this, it was sampling, and they said that the song wasn't written by Marvin Gaye. It was written by someone else whose family was represented in court today. And when the limo door opened and the family of the writer came out, I'm like, it's my buddy from the gym. So yeah. I saw him yesterday.
Huh.
I think it was yesterday, and I go, hey, man. I was like, I wasn't expecting to see you on TV. He goes, yeah, the verdict's coming down today. We're keeping our fingers crossed. Hope everything works out. So I was like, yeah. Oh, it's a local touch to it.
So do you think Ed Sheeran should have won this copyright case? I think they're very similar. I don't know how Ed Sheeran won this, to be honest with you.
You know, this is a very prevalent thing in the rap community. I think there's a multitude of rap songs and rappers that have been sued for sampling, because sampling was such a big deal for a while. But I'm surprised now that artists don't get out in front of it before there's any even chance of this happening and talk about it and say, hey, you know, can we work something out?
No, most of the time they do. Like, they pay for it.
Yeah, or they work out royalties or something like that.
That's a lot of times what it is. It's like you get a 10 cents every time the song is bought or whatever.
Yep.
Yeah, this one didn't get bought. That Blurred Lines, I think Robin Thicke got sued for that.
He did.
One.
He absolutely did.
Yeah, and he lost.
He lost. Yep.
He lost. Vanilla Ice lost.
Katy Perry had one. Donna had mentioned it's a song called Dark Horse. And she lost to a Christian rap group that used the same.
Really?
Whatever.
Huh.
Bars.
9227 says y'all should know it only takes one note to not be copyrighted. All right, we know that now. 4431, you can't sue for similar chord progressions. Imagine how awful it would be if you could. Like, I don't know. I'm not a music guy. I don't have a music bone in my body. But those sound very, very similar. You know, they said Elvis used to steal songs, too. They said Elvis was the biggest song thief that existed.
There's this one YouTube video that's out there. It's this, it starts with, like, Don't Stop Believin'. Mm-hmm. It's, like, three chords. And the guy on the piano, like, he plays like 15 songs.
Really?
Like, and he just plays the same three chords over and over again.
Wow.
And it's like, so, like, yeah, you can't sue for progression.
Yeah. Ed Sheeran said that he was going to retire if he got found guilty of this. So some people were wishing that he would have got found guilty of this. I'm not one of them.
There was one. It was like one of those Casey Kasem moments where, oh, I know who it was now. Eddie Rabbit, who ended up having a great career himself. But Eddie Rabbit evidently wrote a song, and Elvis heard it and liked it and wanted to use it. And he had this really tough decision because he's like, if I say no to Elvis, does it ruin my career? And I believe he gave the song to Elvis, but then he still ended up having his own career with many successful hits. But that he said that was a crossroads in his career because Elvis was going to basically take it one way or the other with the record company.
They say Elvis took a lot of songs from certain people. All right, who said it? Everybody's favorite game, some more than others. Joe reads us quotes from ESPN 97.5 personalities, and the Killer Bees have to guess who said it. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.